We'll listen to Ronnie. Ronnie remembers, remembers the oldies, the 50s and 60s.
Over the years, there have been lots of songs written about girls, and one of the prettiest ones is a song called Close to Kathy, a big national hit in 1962. And I have on the phone the recording artist who sang that particular song. His name is Mike Clifford. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Ronnie. Great to be here.
You were born in Los Angeles.
Right, yeah.
And you're still living in Los Angeles?
Yep, I started here. I traveled the world and kind of went full circle.
You began singing at the age of 5. Were you doing any professional singing at that time, or was that just for fun?
Well, my dad was a professional trumpet player, and he played with all the big bands in the 40s. And part of his schedule was every summer to play at the casino on Catalina Island off the coast here with the big band. And so we'd go over and spend the summer at the country club while he played at night. And during the day, when the steamship came in from the mainland, they had a trio of musicians greet them as they walked down the pier on the plaza of Avalon, and they would play songs, and sometimes tourists would request songs that they play. You know, they'd tip them and all that stuff. And I'm standing there one day. I always like to listen to the music and see all that stuff. And it was a big event when steamships came in. So I was standing there, and this couple asked this musician to play a certain song, an old standard, that I knew because I heard my dad play them all the time. And I knew all the words, and he said he didn't know the words. And I said, well, I know the words. I'll sing it with you. And the guy said, okay. And he started playing it with something like At Last or something like that, that I happen to know because of my dad. The couple was so freaked out, they gave me a $5 tip, and this is 1949.
Technically, that was your first professional gig with a $5
Absolutely.
Tip.
That's what it was. And that was a lot of money in 1949.
Oh, I am sure it was.
Especially for a 5-year-old kid.
Yeah. Did that kind of inspire you to take it a step further, to get serious about singing?
It was just fun for me, you know. It was a lot of fun, and I enjoyed it. And it was easy. Singing has always been like breathing for me. And my mother used to get me to help her do the dishes, and we'd sing harmony on different songs while we were doing the dishes, and that made doing the dishes fun.
Wow, that's great. I never thought of doing the dishes ever being fun, but if singing helped do that for you, then that's fantastic.
Well, my dad would pull out his trumpet sometimes, and we'd have a little jam session going, doing the dishes every night.
Maybe you're going to give people ideas. Maybe, hey, that's the way it should work, actually. Turn it into something beyond just the activity of doing the dishes. At any rate, you were 5 years old when you actually got your first tip for singing. But you didn't really officially start singing professionally until, I guess, you were around 15 years old. Is that right?
Well, I'd done stuff in school.
Right.
And then as I turned 11 or 12, my dad formed his own dance band. His name was Cal Clifford, and he formed a band called the Cavaliers. And it was like a 14-piece band, and he used to bring me along to sing, you know, certain songs with the band that he taught me.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a lot of experience singing live in front of an audience, and the people seemed to like my singing. So
the school you went to was Dorsey High School?
Yeah, but way before that, when I was in elementary school, I remember her name because it was so weird. Mrs. Knezovich was the principal, and she belonged to the Serotonin Club, and my music teacher told her that I was very good. So she invited me to sing at her Serotonin Club luncheon. And I was so thrilled because I got to get out of school for a couple hours, right? And a free lunch.
Right.
And I was supposed to sing the Lord's Prayer, which I knew like the back of my hand. And she said, oh, dear, I'm going to pick up a friend of mine before we go. She had this big old Chrysler, I remember. And it turned out the lady she picked up was the silent film star, Mae Murray. She was a big hit in the 20s with a film called The Merry Widow.
Right.
And she was like the Madonna of her day. So now this is in the 50s. So we go to the luncheon. I sing the song. We eat the thing. We drop Mae Murray off. And she turns to me and says, my dear, you are going to have a great career. And that was very meaningful to me.
Wow.
I told my mother about that and my father when I got home. And they said, well, she must know what she's talking about. You probably have something. So I thought it was very meaningful because she'd been around and she knew what she was talking about.
You got into recording with a very well-known duo that had a very memorable hit, and I'm talking about Patience and Prudence. How did you make the Patience and Prudence connection?
Well, it's kind of like the Kevin Bacon thing.
the six degrees of separation?
Everybody's connected somehow.
Yes.
Through a fluke, I got signed with Liberty Records because I made a demo and they loved it. And they put me with this producer named Mark McIntyre. Well, it turns out that Mark McIntyre was a piano player in the Matty Malnick band, and my dad was the trumpet player, and they roomed together on the road in the 40s. So they knew each other, and they hadn't seen each other in, like, you know, 15, 20 years. So Mark said, "Cal, if you say he's good, then he's good, but I want him to sing some of my songs for demos to see if he can really sing something besides stuff he's rehearsed with you."
I see.
So I started doing demos for Mark, and he really liked what I did. And one of the demos was a song he wrote called Tucumcari. And it turned out so good, I begged him to have them release it as my first record. Well, I can understand now as an adult.
The title sounds familiar. Is that the one that Jimmy Rogers eventually did, Tucumcari?
Jimmy Rogers recorded it, and it became a hit about 3 or 4 months later.
Mm-hmm.
So as a concession, instead of doing a solo record, he decided to put me with Pam and Prudy for my first record to ensure we'd at least get airplay.
Right. You said Pam and Prudy was Patience. Is that her name, Pam?
Yep.
I never knew that.
Well, that's what I called them.
Oh, okay. But it was Patience and Prudence who did Tonight You Belong to Me.
Along Without You Now, The Money Tree, and a bunch of other things.
Now, what was the billing on the record? Was it a Patience and Prudence record with Mike Clifford?
I freaked out when I saw the label. I guess they decided to push me because it was Mike Clifford with Patience and Prudence.
Wow.
Okay. I couldn't believe it. And as an added bonus on Should I, he got Eddie Cochran to come in and play guitar.
Wow. And, of course, Eddie was a Liberty recording artist as well.
They took me into Cy Warnicki's office at Liberty to hear the master when it was done.
Yes.
And Mark said, "Mike, there's somebody here I want you to meet." And I walk in the room, and there's Eddie Cochran standing there.
Oh, gosh.
And he runs over to me and says, "Oh, Mike, it's so great to meet you. I'm so thrilled to be on your first record." He's so thrilled. I was so thrilled to meet him and have him play on my record. He was already a big hit. He was so humble and so nice, I'll never forget it.
Oh, my gosh. Now, I believe that Should I was the A-side, wasn't it? Supposed to be the
right.
A-side.
But Whisper, Whisper turned out to be the one that got the airplay because it sounded like the Fleetwood.
We'll play both of them. First, this is Should I, and it shows kind of a different side of Mike Clifford because this is not a ballad.
My Elvis side.
This is your Elvis side. So, ladies and gentlemen, this is Mike Clifford with Patience and Prudence doing Should I.
Should I tuck my shirt in, baby? Uh-huh-huh, baby, huh? Should I? What do you say?
No, no, no. Uh-uh,
baby,
better just wait.
Should I roll my sleeves up, baby? Uh-huh-huh, baby, huh? Should I? What do you say? Should I? What do you say?
No, no, no.
Clifford and Patience and Prudence. We're going to flip that record over, and you said that Whisper, Whisper actually got more attention, even though it was the intended B-side.
Right, because the Fleetwoods were a big hit for them at the time, and they thought the sound was similar, and we got a good blend with our voices, actually.
Here it is. This is Whisper, Whisper. Another guy with the last name of Clifford, by the name of Buzz Clifford, who did a record called Babysittin' Boogie. Were you ever confused with him? Did anybody ever come up to you and say, could you do that Babysittin' Boogie song?
You know, I wasn't.
Good.
Because we didn't look anything alike, even though we're probably related because there are not that many Cliffords around.
Right.
But I was confused with Cliff Richard from England.
Really?
A lot.
Wow.
In fact, they booked me once in Texas, and when I got there, they said, oh, you're not the one we wanted. I said, excuse me, I have a top 10 record. I said, well, yeah, we like your record, but we thought we were getting Cliff Richard.
Oh, boy, that is an ego-deflating moment, isn't it?
Well, I put an extra effort into the show, and after the show, they said, well, we don't know about him, but we're glad we got him.
Oh, okay.
Great show.
So it ended up all right.
Yeah.
How do we get now to Close to Kathy?
When I left Liberty, my manager, Helen, also managed Johnny Mathis.
Oh.
And Johnny was on Columbia, and she wanted me with Columbia. So I did some records for Columbia, and also I did the Ed Sullivan Show a couple of times. On my second Ed Sullivan Show, I did a song called Bombay, written by George Cates and Lawrence Welk, that got a tremendous amount of airplay. It was kind of jazzy. And lo and behold, it became number one in Venezuela. And they flew me down to Caracas to do my own TV special on Venevisión. And I wound up in the middle of a revolution. They always have one every year there, I guess. But anyway, that turned out great, and I got back to New York, and she had signed me with United Artists and Lieber and Stoller, and that's when we started rehearsing for my first session with them.
Uh-huh.
Of which Close to Kathy was one of the songs I chose, because prior to that, and here in L.A., I was in an acting class with Kathy Linden. Remember Kathy Linden?
Billy, and You'd Be Surprised.
And Goodbye, Jimmy, Goodbye. I had the hugest crush on her. So when I heard Close to Kathy, it was my story with Kathy.
Oh. You're actually, in other words, when you were singing the song, you were thinking of Kathy Linden. Your Kathy was actually C-A-T-H-Y. She spelled her name K-A-T-H-Y.
Right, but it didn't matter to me.
Who wrote the song Close to Kathy?
Earl Schumann and Ben Goodman. They also wrote, Hey There, Lonely Girl. And probably a few other songs I can't think of right now.
Now, you were working with Lieber and Stoller?
Yeah, they were great.
Were they producing you at the time, or what were they doing?
Yeah.
Did they produce Close to Kathy?
Yep, they produced my three biggest hits.
And this was your first record on United Artists?
Right.
And it became a huge national hit. I think in some areas it was at least top three, wasn't it?
Well, most areas it was top 10, top 5, and in a couple areas it was number 1.
Number 1. Okay, well,
yeah.
let's listen to it right now from the year 1962. And this is the recording that made Mike Clifford a star. This is Close to Kathy.
I'm so close to Kathy, I know just what she's dreaming of. She always calls me up to tell me. Every time she falls in love. Oh, I'm so close to Kathy, I know her every tender sigh. She loves to cry upon my shoulder, always for some other guy. Oh, why can't she see the one true lasting love in her life should be me? I'm so close to Kathy, as close as anyone can be, and I'll stay close to Kathy, hoping someday she'll feel close to me.
That song so many times, I've never gotten tired of it. It's such a pretty song, and it's kind of a very simple song, simplicity. They don't write songs like that anymore, do they?
No, they don't, and I love the arrangement that Jim Harbert did because it reminded me of a summer place.
Ah,
I love
yes.
the music on a summer place.
Yeah, I'd like to bring back those old days, certainly.
Yeah.
Well, you went from one girl to another girl with your follow-up record, which was called What to Do with Lori. Was that part of the same recording session?
No, that was a follow-up, and Billy Ed Wheeler and Jerry and Mike wrote that for me.
Well, Billy Ed Wheeler became a well-known country artist as well.
Yes, this was when he was first starting.
He's the guy that did Ode to the Little Brown Shack out back.
Uh-huh. I think Mike and Jerry had him under contract.
This is Mike Clifford and the follow-up to Close to Kathy, What to Do with Lori.
What to do with Lori? What to do with Lori when I take her out tonight? Shall I hold her oh so gently, or should I hold her very tight? Oh, what to do with love? to do with Lori? I don't know just where to start. Should I talk about the moon or tell her what is in my heart? Should I kiss her on the cheek or kiss her on the chin or kiss her tiny fingertips? Shall I kiss her pretty nose or try to kiss her on the what to do with Lori? What to do and when and how? Shall I wait until tomorrow or tell her that I love her now? To do with Lori, what to do and when and how? Should I wait until tomorrow or tell her that I love her now?
Well, if people take these songs seriously, they may wonder if you were so close to Kathy, whatever happened to that relationship? You went right to Lori.
Well, Kathy was married.
Oh, okay. There you go.
She was very loyal to her husband. She was very nice to me, but,
okay.
You know, nothing could ever come of that.
I guess. So you had to get into singing about Lori.
Right.
This interview, of course, is on the website Jersey Girls Sing. It's on my radio page. And the Jersey Girls are the Delicates, Denise Ferry, Arlene Lanzati, and Peggy Santillia, as well as Bernadette Carroll. And I understand that you did a show with Murray the K. Was it the Brooklyn Paramount or the Brooklyn Fox? I'm not really sure, but Denise was telling me that Murray had you do skits, and there was a skit with What to Do with Lori, and Denise said that she played the role of Lori, and the Dovells were also in that skit.
Absolutely. Well, it was Murray the K show, and I believe this is the Christmas show, and I just pulled out the program that I have in front of me from the show, and some of the people on the show were the Shirelles, Dee Dee Sharp, Chuck Jackson, Bobby Vinton, the Capris, me, the Marvelettes, the Del Sattins, Tony Orlando, Little Eva, the Dovells, the Ronettes, before Be My Baby, Tommy Rowe, the Majors, and the Delicates. We had, like, a cocktail table set up on the stage. It was like a little nightclub setting.
Right.
So it was like an intimate setting in a large theater. It was kind of like vaudeville, I guess. So I think he had Tony Orlando make eyes at Denise to make me jealous.
Now, what did the Dovells do in this particular skit?
They were also after her. Like, everybody was after her, and I wanted her.
I see.
I didn't know what to do with her.
And Denise was Lori. She played the role of
Lori. Of course.
Lori. Okay.
So everybody was after Denise. And she was a very beautiful girl, and there was no reason why anybody wouldn't want to be after her. She was the Marilyn Monroe of the show.
Oh, wow. She's going to love it when she hears this interview. She's talked about that so many times. She said, I did this skit with Mike Clifford, and she must have told me this about 100 times.
Everybody in the audience was saying I was stupid for not just grabbing her and taking her off the stage, but, you know, wasn't part of the plot.
Now, we got to point out that this was, I believe, a 10-day engagement. You did, like, 5 shows a day, so this is about 50 shows.
Right.
And so you did the skit, like, 50 times.
Right.
You could have done it in your sleep.
Exactly.
You have a new project that we're going to talk about to end the show, but before we get to that new project, which is with a singer named Sandy Zaki, I just want to mention that, first of all, you did a lot of TV appearances. You've appeared on, among other shows, American Bandstand, Shindig. It said you replaced Bobby Sherman. Did you actually replace him as the host per show, or what was that?
Donna Lauren and Bobby Sherman were the two featured singers every week, and they'd have guest stars. And I guess his contract was coming up, and I did one show, and this one show I did, it turns out that all the cameras and everything electrical went down. I went 12 o'clock one day for rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
We were going to do a dress rehearsal later and then film it around 8. I was supposed to be home by 9 at the latest. Well, we didn't wind up shooting the show until 4 the next morning.
Oh, gosh.
And would you believe that audience stayed there for 14 hours?
Oh, my gosh.
Still screaming at 4 in the morning.
Wow. So this was one show, basically.
Yeah, that was my first show. And I guess because I didn't get angry or cause any problems or complain or anything, I thought, well, you know, this happens. I've grown up in show business. I know this stuff happens. I was just happy to be there all that time because I loved being in that venue. They said, hey, this guy's real easy to work with. He knows his music, and he looks good on camera, and he sounds good. I think we're going to sign him up.
Wow. So you did several.
The next one I did with Miss Raquel Welsh and a few other small names like that. I was all set to do the next series of shows, and about 2 weeks later, we got a notice that they had canceled the show.
Oh, okay.
But you know, the nice thing is, they did pay my contract for the rest of the season.
Oh, that's nice.
They paid me off.
That's like a baseball manager that gets fired, but he sits out the next 2 years and collects his million-dollar checks. Anyway.
Exactly, but believe me, it wasn't $1 million.
Oh, that's all right. But it was still important to you, whatever it was.
Oh, absolutely,
yeah. You're also on Where the Action Is, of course. That was with Paul Revere and the Raiders, Linda Scott, and Steve Alamo. Dick Clark produced that show.
Yeah.
And, of course, the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yes.
And many
the
other
Joey
shows.
Joey Bishop Show also.
Joey Bishop as well.
Donald O'Connor. I did Clay Cole's show, too.
Oh, you did do Clay. I forgot to mention Clay. How you doing? A shout-out to Clay Cole, who's a good friend of mine.
Clay, actually, when I played the Steel Pier in Atlantic City, Clay was MC for the show I did there.
You also did a TV special with Jackie DeShannon?
Yes, I did a pilot for my own series, which unfortunately got bogged down in litigation.
Oh.
But my guests on the show were Jackie DeShannon, Mamie Van Doren, Mickey Rooney, and Leonard Nimoy.
The Leonard Nimoy.
Yes, Mr. Spock.
Mr. Spock. Now, you did a movie. Now, I don't know if you were actually in the movie, but your voice was in the movie. You sang a song called Love Will Keep Us Together. We're talking about this movie called Sextet.
That was Mae West's last movie, yes.
There was an actor named Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton and Mae West sing a duet of Love Will Keep Us Together. And Timothy was such a terrible singer that they called me in to dub his voice with Mae West. So I sing Love Will Keep Us Together with an English accent with Mae West, and it was a joy.
With an English accent?
Yes.
Could you do a little bit of that now?
Beautiful, your looks will never be gone. When the others turn you off, who'll be turning you on?
I will.
There you go, that's her part.
Well, that's her part. I read that you actually not only were able to do it in that voice, but you could actually do the song in Mae West's voice, too. You did this in the performance as Mae...
You will. Oh, yeah.
Did you ever take any singing lessons or vocal lessons?
Yes, I did. And I worked for many years with Richard Loring, who was like the vocal coach to the stars. And he was also a songwriter. And we wrote several things together, and one of the songs is on the new CD I did with Sandy. And unfortunately, he passed away a few years ago, but he was a great influence on me. He was also Johnny Mathis's vocal coach, Sergio Franchi, and a bunch of people.
Over the years, since you had the hit records, have you been performing all these years?
All the time.
You never stopped?
Never. You know, when you don't make records that everybody in the world can hear, they think you died. But the truth is, I've been working locally and regionally for all this time in clubs and cabarets, doing concerts and autograph shows and local TV shows and stuff like that. And I did a lot of movie title songs for my Curbs record label for several years. And I did theater. I was in the First National Touring Company of Greece playing Teen Angel for a couple of years. A little kid named Johnny Travolta who got his start in that. And Mary Lou Henner and... You know, a bunch of people like that nobody ever heard of.
Right, absolutely.
I did Fiddler on the Roof with Jan Pierce. I played
the Marvel,
Taylor.
I thought you were telling me you played the Rooster.
No. I did other theater things, too.
And you were also in a few other movies, weren't you?
Yeah,
Doc Moore's Hot Pants?
Yeah, that was kind of fun because it was done in Scandinavia and they needed a voice for the track, which was already done.
I see.
And it happened to be in my key and I was under contract to AIP at the time, so
wow. It
just worked out great. I also did The Glass Sphinx that Les Baxter wrote A Dream Away for, and I had the London Symphony Orchestra do that track for me, and
wow.
That was a big thrill for me, too.
You've done quite a bit, obviously, and I guess you still sing close to Kathy.
You know, it's amazing. On the last show I did a few months ago, we sent out all these notices that we're going to appear at Vitello's in Studio City, which is next to Universal City, and it's a very known special cabaret and Italian restaurant, but above is a cabaret kind of theater. Sandy called, and she said a friend of hers told another friend that I was going to sing with her,
mm-hmm. And
she screamed. Now, this is a woman about my age, I guess. Said, oh, my God, that was my favorite record. Is he still alive? And said, yes, and he's going to be there singing. So she and her husband came, and she was just speechless when I met her. She couldn't believe it. That she was actually meeting me like 45 years after the fact.
Wow.
That was her favorite song. So that really made me feel good. Ronnie, I got to tell you, Close to Kathy and The Other Side, She's Just Another Girl, I recorded both of those in German. Close to Kathy became Weil ich dich so lieb hab, and She's Just Another Girl was Wenn ich in deine Augen schau. And they both were huge hits in Germany, and Bear Records just released a CD of, they call High School Princes, of American and British artists who had hits in Germany in German.
And
I'm right on the cover of that. I couldn't believe it. Somebody told me about it a couple years ago.
Were you fluent in German, or did you just do it all phonetically?
I had a coach, and I did it phonetically, but I guess it worked. But I've also sung in Spanish and Italian and so forth and so on. Whatever it calls for, I do.
We're going to close right now with a track from your brand new CD. And before we get to it, I want to thank you, first of all, for doing this interview. This has been such a joy, and I'm sure your fans are going to really appreciate it. So I want to say, thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing this.
It's a pleasure. And you know what? It's fun to reminisce because it brings back a lot of good times, and I hope it does for everybody listening, too.
Now tell me, who is Sandy Zaki, and how did this particular project come about?
Well, I was talking about Richard Loring before, and
yes. Richard
Loring, among his clients, had Sandy Zaki. And Richard had the brilliant idea of us singing together, because Sandy had done her own cabaret act, and I had done my own cabaret act. And he said, you know what? Your two voices really go well together, and your personalities, too. Well, it turns out he was right, because from our first show, which we got an incredible review on, to our last show, which we got an incredible review on, people just seem to love the way we sound together. And we decided, actually, when Richard passed, that it was time for us to honor him with a CD. So that's why we did this CD.
And the CD is called?
Love is Everything. The song was written by Arthur Hamilton, who also wrote Cry Me a River, produced by Paul Turner, arranged by Ben DeTosti, who I used in the 60s, and brought back in the new century to do the arrangements for this.
And when did you record the album?
It was a little more than a year ago, but I hadn't listened to it in a while, and I put it on the other day, and I thought, you know what, I'm really proud of this, because good music is timeless, and I think this will stand the test of time.
Where is it available right now?
It's on iTunes and CD Baby, and if anybody else wants to get some of my old stuff, there's a selection available on Amazon.com, which I have nothing to do with, but I'm just proud somebody put it out, so it's there if they want it.
You don't presently have an official website.
No, I have a Facebook.
Facebook.
It's Mike Clifford, Close to Kathy. And Phyllis Spazieri out of Chicago runs it for me.
Okay. Shout out to Phyllis. Hi, Phyllis.
Thank you, Phyllis.
It was thanks to Phyllis that I was able to secure this interview with you.
And I want to tell everybody that since I started there, like 10 other Mike Clifford, so you got to put Close to Kathy.
Well, Mike, we're going to play a track from the album, and we're going to close the show with it. And this is actually a medley of two songs. And what can you tell us about My One and Only Love and Evergreen?
When we were putting together our first cabaret act, I do my best rehearsals in the shower. And my mind wanders, and I start singing, and I can really hear myself well. And I came up with this idea, and I presented it to Sandy, and she loved it, and we worked out the harmonies. And this has been like a staple of our shows for years now. And so I'm really proud of the way it turned out, and Ben did a fantastic arrangement. So I hope Miss Streisand and Mr. Williams are pleased with it.
Okay, we're going to close.
She wrote Evergreen.
Yes, that's right. She did, and not only that, but she won an Academy Award for it, too.
Yes, she did, and he did, too.
We're going to close now. From the new CD, Love is Everything, Mike Clifford and Sandy Zaki doing a medley of My One and Only Love and Evergreen.
The very thought of you makes my heart sing like an April breeze on the wings of spring. I hear your voice so warm, so tender. My one and only love, soft as an easy chair. Love, fresh as the morning air. One love, shared by two. I have found with you,
like a rose under the April snow. I was always certain love would grow. Love, ageless and evergreen, seldom seen by two. Every day a beginning, spirits rise and their dances unrehearsed,
and warm and excited, 'cause we have a wildest love.
Two lights that shine as one
morning.
That's the show, and now a couple of bonus tracks by Mike Clifford. This one was the follow-up to What to Do with Laurie, and it also became a chart record, One Boy Too Late.
Tell her you need her. Tell her you love her. Don't let
every night. Finally, here's the German version of Close to Kathy, and I can't pronounce the title, so I'm going to let Mike do it for me. What's the title, Mike?
Weil ich dich so lieb hab.
Thank you.
Weil ich dich so lieb hab, weiß ich, wovon dein Herz oft träumt. Du suchst das Glück bei einem anderen, doch vielleicht ist es versäumt. Oh, weil ich dich so liebe, versuche ich dich zu verstehen. Und wenn es mir auch noch so weh tut, niemals wird ich von dir gehen. Bin ich ganz allein, die Hoffnung bleibt in mir, es wird bald anders sein. Bei Tag und Nacht an dich und meine Liebe sagt mir.